Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Last week, we talked about depression. We focused all week long on depression, and we were thinking that, you know, this week, let's continue that model. No, we were going to continue the model, but talk about a different condition. And as we were looking at different conditions, of course, we found a lot of recent articles and publications and news about autism.
And it's appropriate?
Probably because probably because April was Autism Awareness
Month. April is Autism Awareness. That's right. Every April is Autism Awareness Month. And when we discussed this, we went back and looked at previous podcasts, and lo and behold,
about this time last year,
we did a week April, on... we did a week on autism.
Yep.
But so, things have changed.
Right. Well, so we're into the first week of May now. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's okay. But because we're going to talk about, we're going to kind of give an update, an overview and an update on autism, especially some of that new news that you were just referring to.
And everybody I talk to, being this is May.
Right.
Okay. Most of us have put away our Christmas decorations. Some of us
haven't. Right?
We just got our tree out of the yard this week, this past week. The first quarter of 2018 is gone.
The first third.
So if you have plans, that's right, April through April,
right?
Okay, so 4 months are gone. So if you have plans for 2018, you know, remember we talked about resolutions and, you know, goals and all that stuff?
I'll have to.
Man, if you have plans for 2018,
get on them.
You
only have 6 months left.
A few months left. And now we're into bikini season in this part
that's
of the world.
That's true.
You know,
that's true.
So we had all these resolutions that where we were going to be by summer, or where we're going to be by the end of the year, or what we were going to accomplish this year. And remember, 4 months are gone.
Right.
So,
and I think I said 6 months remaining. It's 8 months left. There's only 8 months left.
8 months left.
That's
right. I mean, it's just unbelievable how fast. Yeah. And everybody's saying that we don't know where. I guess April really flew by for many people.
Yeah.
But to think that 4 months of the new year are gone already is alarming.
It is.
So we need to talk about that too, because some of us need to get back on track.
Yes, some of us do.
This is the time when you lose your momentum.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, but the real reason we're talking about autism today is because of April being the month, but also because there are some new data out and some new questions being asked and some old questions being revisited that we wanted to talk about this week.
Absolutely. Okay. So we're going to break autism down in much the same way we did depression last week, but we're going to do it a little bit differently. We're going to talk about some of the diagnostic stuff today.
Right.
And we're going to talk about some of that new research tomorrow on the prevalence, because that's some really interesting information and data, but calls for some really thoughtful consideration
with important implications.
Right.
You know, we need to dig into those data and figure out what we're going to do about some of these things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So through the week, we'll be talking about different things. So today we're going to talk about the diagnosis of autism. And I think that it's really critical that we spend some time talking about it because the criteria has changed, and it's different in different places.
Countries.
In different places, like in a doctor's office, they're going to be certain criteria that have to be met to meet criteria for diagnosis. If you are at a school and the child is going to look for special education services for autism, the Individuals with Disability Education Act has slightly different diagnostic criteria, or they look at slightly different things.
Well, the criteria are the same.
Similar.
Yeah. I mean, to get a diagnosis, you have to meet the criteria in DSM-5, although there are different slightly different issues in a school setting.
Right.
Because of the nature.
Right. There's different things that have to happen for you to get, just because you have, it doesn't always happen, doesn't typically happen even, but, you know, just because you have a diagnosis or your child has a diagnosis of autism does not necessarily
mean... From a pediatrician.
Exactly. Does not necessarily mean that they will be able to get special education services.
Exactly.
And we're going to spend a lot of time talking about that on Friday.
And that happens across... across disorders.
Oh, yeah.
Just because a child, it's not the diagnosis
that
gets you services. You can meet criteria for the diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
but not meet the criteria that the school has, because the school criteria are based on academic underachievement.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have ADHD, but if it's not impairing your academic ability, you're not going to get services for ADHD.
Right.
Not just because you have the diagnosis.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to pull some information from an Autism Speaks article called How is Autism Diagnosed? On Wednesday, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the assessment of autism.
Right.
We're going to talk about the overall criteria mm-hmm. here. And what I like about this article is down at the bottom, it has a link to another Autism Speaks page that really breaks down and gives you all the criteria, specific criteria for mm-hmm. autism spectrum disorder from the DSM-5.
Right.
We also included a link to a document from the Vanderbilt Peabody College, their IRIS Center, that compares DSM-5 to DSM-4, and then there's even a section that compares DSM-5 to IDEA.
And that's really useful.
It's a really useful comparison.
Because that explains why you have that difference between what you get, a medical diagnosis versus a school diagnosis.
Right. So, you know, we're going to talk about this in, we're going to talk about some of these things in a little bit of detail, but we're going to really specifically try to differentiate the new criteria from the old criteria. Yeah?
Right.
So, in days past, prior to 2013, May...
Back in fact, before 2013.
Before May of 2013, we used the DSM-4. And in May of 2013, the DSM-5 was published, and so it sort of shifted things. The DSM-5 made a lot of changes to many diagnoses, but autism was one that was biggest hit, I think.
Right. Yeah, the most, for us who work with children, certainly was the most significant change in the diagnosis. And people were worried about it prior to when the... work groups were finally coming out, and they were beginning to say, this is what it's going to look like. And people were very concerned initially about what was going to happen to their children, because would the criteria were, it's not that the criteria were different, but there were enough differences that people were worried that their children may no longer meet criteria after the publication of DSM-5. That was the biggest concern, because they were that different.
Right. So one of the biggest changes is that you know in the DSM-4 autism was contained within an umbrella diagnosis of pervasive developmental disorders, and I think that people sometimes, maybe it's because of the way that it is sort of organized now, people tended to think or misunderstand what that relationship was. In the DSM-4, they would always call it, autism, and they would refer to like Asperger's as, high functioning autism. Well, there were a lot of people that talked about it that way, but both were distinctive disorders within the umbrella of pervasive developmental disorders.
That's right. They were distinct.
Right.
That's the important thing. Prior to DSM-5, to 2013. Asperger's was one disorder, autism was another disorder.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in fact, under the umbrella of pervasive developmental disorders, there were several diagnoses,
five altogether.
Including autism, Asperger's, something called Rett's disorder, something called childhood disintegrative disorder, and then pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified, or PDD-NOS. When the DSM-5 came out, all of that was collapsed,
right.
Except for Rett's disorder. Rett's disorder mm-hmm. remains separate. But otherwise, all of the other things, all those other diagnoses, autism, Asperger's, PDD, NOS, and childhood disintegrative disorder, were all collapsed under the new umbrella of autism spectrum disorders.
That's right.
And that's what we have now.
That was a huge change. Mm-hmm. That was a sea change. I think my feeling now is that in many ways that puts us in the right direction.
Yeah.
Because many of the disorders, we've had this discussion many times, many of the disorders that we deal with should be on a spectrum.
Right.
Because it's not, you can't differentiate that clearly. And sometimes, whether it's ADHD or depression, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. they do range from mild to severe.
Right.
Okay, and that is a more, I think, a more accurate way to to talk about these things.
Right. Now, in the DSM-4 and before, you know, in all of the criteria before DSM-5, prior to DSM-5, that would have been the easiest way to say that.
Right.
Prior to DSM-5, to make a diagnosis and differentiate these disorders, primarily between autism and Asperger's, those are the mm-hmm. two main ones that we had to differentiate. Childhood disintegrative disorder did not occur very often. Rett's disorder didn't.
It was hard to make that diagnosis because you had to establish loss of function.
Right.
And that's so rare.
Right.
Unless it's a neurological, biological condition.
Right. And Rett's disorder is a condition that they believe primarily exists in girls.
Yeah, in girls.
Which would be a fantastic discussion for us to have at some point, because that's one of the few disorders, developmental disorders, that primarily affect girls as opposed to boys. But we'll save that for another day. But the primary difference between autism and Asperger's was language. Prior to DSM-5, you had to look at behavioral characteristics within three categories: communication skills, social skills, and repetitive, stereotypic type restricted behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And those three categories, you know, depending on sort of your profile, you would differentiate between Asperger's disorder, and PDD NOS. We'll just throw that one in there. So if you had problems in all three, that was autism. If you had problems in social and repetitive behaviors, but not in language or not in communication, that would be Asperger's. And then any other combination would be PDD NOS. All right? DSM-5 changed all that.
Mm-hmm.
Completely got rid of the language aspect.
Right.
So now you don't even have to, and it sounds strange to say it this way, but language isn't even part of the consideration for the diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder anymore.
Right.
Now it just focuses on the social, so they refer to it as social communication,
they combined it into a different diagnosis,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Social communication disorder.
Right. Yeah, there's a separate disorder. But you have the social aspect and the repetitive behaviors, restricted repetitive patterns of behavior as a second subset. So those are the only two behavioral categories for autism spectrum disorder. And that, in reality, that's a major change, because I think that as we get into prevalence tomorrow, I think that that's one of the reasons we are seeing such a significant increase in the diagnoses of autism spectrum disorder.
Mm-hmm.
You agree?
Agreed.
All right.
I think I agree.
You agree.
Say that again.
Again. Oh, I said, didn't say
why
that
the
again.
Increase?
Because we have removed some of the criteria, and because we have removed some of the criteria, the focus is less specific. And so now, if we have a child who is having some social difficulties and they're having some repetitive or atypical behaviors, in particular, one of the behavioral things that are listed now is the sensory sensitivities. There's more kids that meet those criteria, and so we're seeing more of that.
But the you said the diagnosis is easier to make.
It's being made more often.
For two reasons.
Uh-huh. Well, we're going to get into all that tomorrow.
Right.
What?
Nothing.
What are you thinking about?
We'll do it tomorrow. Maybe.
He's been like that all morning.
Oh.
So these are the two, when we're making a diagnosis according to DSM-5, those are the two main areas that we have to look at.
Right.
The social aspect, which includes social communication, but it's more specific to social relationships, and right. The repetitive behaviors.
Yeah, it's more about relationships than language.
Right.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then the severity of autism depends on the way in which the person, or the severity or the significance of the limitations in those two areas. Mm-hmm. And then they have a little chart and everything that goes with that.
And there is a severity notation. Mm-hmm. There are specifiers
right
at the end, but there's specifiers and severity. And those are also important. Mm-hmm. If you're making this, somebody's making this diagnosis, it's important to add those two things to it. So it's not just the diagnostic criteria.
Right.
It's also severity. You want to address the issue of severity and the issue of specifiers.
Right.
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 The specifiers are especially helpful.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Now, as complicated as some of that stuff sounds, you know, we're focusing on these two key aspects. And I encourage you listening out there, not you, no. Richard, but you
I'm
out
encouraged.
There listening.
I'm encouraged.
Well, be encouraged. But I encourage you to be, you know, mindful of, you know, some of the stereotypical things that we look at that we overgeneralize as meaning autism. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you know, sometimes we'll say that a person has or does not have autism simply based upon eye contact. Mm-hmm. I have heard many people come in and say, well, he doesn't have autism because he makes good eye contact.
Right.
Well, it's not, that's not a specific criterion, by the way. It is an indication, perhaps, of social interactions and relationships and engagement, but it's not a specific criterion. And it, whenever it even talks about eye contact, it's not that they don't make eye contact. It's inappropriate eye contact. It's atypical eye contact. So oftentimes that does mean, you know, not locking eyes with someone. But it can also mean really intense eye contact. Like, you know, there are kids who, like, give you that stare down. Right. They're like eye to eye, and it's really intense, and it's like, okay, one of us have to look away because
somebody has to blink.
Yeah, it's really difficult. But, you know, that's just an example of, we have to be careful that we don't overgeneralize. And again, I think that's something we're going to talk about tomorrow with the prevalence rate. Mm-hmm. So, what?
Nothing. I'll tell you later.
What? What?
The phone is making me crazy.
I know.
I am absolutely losing my mind, and I can't concentrate because I think I know what it is. But
yeah, it's 8 o'clock on Saturday morning, and our office phone is ringing.
And ringing and ringing.
Yeah.
And ringing and ringing.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm trying to work. I'm trying to talk through it. Was that obvious?
Yes. That's the other thing. Okay. Other than that.
So, anything else about the diagnosis that you wanted to mention?
ADHD is a very difficult thing to manage at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning.
It is.
No, I just we talked about diagnosis today. The diagnostic criteria have changed.
Right.
Big changes, and that those changes are resulting probably in more children being diagnosed. Mm-hmm. The other thing we should talk about, and I think we're going to talk about this more at another time this week, is we want to make this diagnosis at younger and younger ages.
Right.
So the reason these criteria are so important mm-hmm. is because the sooner you make the diagnosis, mm-hmm. the sooner you can begin therapy. However, it's very difficult to make the diagnosis in a one-year-old
right.
because they just don't demonstrate these things.
But the repertoire of behaviors that are expected at that age are relatively right. limited.
And you will hear about all these fancy ways of diagnosing mm-hmm. autism that are done in laboratory settings
right.
that most of us are not going to have access to. And it's like all other neuroimaging techniques, they're not really ready for clinical use yet. And so that's another thing that we want to discuss later in the week, that these very early diagnoses in children who are months old hold promise, but they're not clinical tools yet. So we want to talk about that.
Because there is a... There are advantages and significant disadvantages of trying to make the diagnosis early.
Early, that's right.
So we have to be mindful of that. So.
But certainly we want to make the diagnosis before age four. And the problem is that many children, most children, well, 39%, don't get the diagnosis until they're over the age of four. And then you've lost a couple of years of intervention. But that... at a later time.
Absolutely. So, all right.
So don't let TV guide your thinking. That's the other problem, is that people see TV shows about these things and they start to think about it in terms of what the TV show is saying. And it's a little more complicated than that.
Absolutely it is. So,
I'm going to go check the phones now and see who in the world is calling us at 8 o'clock in the morning.
I don't have any idea who it is, but I see
Goodness
you do.
Goodness gracious.
All right. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid. Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning.